You're listening to Comedy Central.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
June 26, 2018. From Comedy Central's World News headquarters in New York, this is The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition.
We don't have much time. My guests tonight are an author and a former president of the United States. James Patterson and Bill Clinton are here, everybody. Yeah. I'll let you Google which one was president. But first, let's catch up on today's headlines. Do you guys know Rodrigo Duterte, the president of the Philippines? He's kind of like Trump if Trump was a foreigner instead of a guy who hates foreigners, right? He's creepy around women, he dislikes Obama for no good reason, and just like Trump, he's always saying something controversial.
Outrage growing in the Philippines after its leader called God stupid. Late last week, President Rodrigo Duterte asked why Adam and Eve were created to be allowed to give into temptation.
You created something perfect, and then you think of an event that would tempt and destroy the quality of your work. Who is this stupid God?
Oh, man. That audience did not like that. Yeah, they look like when the TMZ staff had Kanye West visit them. That's what they looked like. And if you're gonna call God stupid, you don't need to bring up big theological questions about Adam and Eve. I mean, God made a bear that's too fat to f***. That's stupid. That's silly. Just pull that up. Meanwhile, back in the US, the Supreme Court voted today 5-4 to uphold President Trump's travel ban. Yeah. And yeah, congratulations to President Trump, because part of what tipped it for him with the Supreme Court is that the court said it wasn't a Muslim ban because it included North Korea. Yeah. Which is amazing. Because remember, people called it a Muslim ban, and so Trump included North Korea and was like, see, it's not a Muslim ban. Yeah. He basically did the thing that guys do when they buy condoms, like, hey, can I get condoms and a pack of gum? Yeah. And the Supreme Court was like, he's not trying to smash, he bought the gum. So kudos to him. All right, that's the headlines. Let's move on to our main story. Sound effect. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, queen of the press room and mother of lies. Ever since a Virginia chicken restaurant asked her to leave this weekend, the big debate in America has been, do government officials have the right to be left alone when they're off the clock? If Sarah Huckabee Sanders gets asked to leave a restaurant, or if Kirstjen Nielsen is heckled while she's eating Mexican food, if Stephen Miller is out on a date and somebody... I'm messing with you, that'll never happen. I mean, come on. No, for real though. The question is it right for people to protest government officials if they see them in public? And if you listen to a lot of cable news pundits, they have the answer.
We need to stop all this and begin to behave in a civilized manner.
If we can't agree to disagree and let each other be, and neither side wants to do that, it becomes a problem.
There are certain lines, I think, that even in this breakdown of civility we've had in politics that people realize you shouldn't cross.
Are you allowed to just kick someone out because you don't agree with their policies or their beliefs? Whatever happened to tolerance?
Well, yes. Whatever happened to tolerance? Tolerance got grabbed by the pussy. Didn't you hear? You didn't hear? Yeah. That's what happened to tolerance. Trump called her an animal, locked her up, and threw her kids in a cage. That's what happened to tolerance. Like, these people have more amnesia than the characters in a Lifetime movie. What happened to tolerance? And you know, we've also heard people say that it's fine to protest government officials as long as you do it during business hours.
Protesters target other prominent Trump officials and supporters during their personal time.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders is at a restaurant with her family, 7 people there. Are her kids watching this? Are her kids seeing her mom being harassed just because they don't agree with her political opinions?
It's funny how these people are saying administration officials shouldn't be protested during their off hours, as if the administration's policies only work from 9 to 5. Yeah? It's not like when the White House staff goes home every night, all of a sudden everyone in America is like, woohoo! I have health care back until 9 a.m. tomorrow! Yeah! I've only got health care for the evening. Does anyone know a good night dentist? Yeah? And by the way, night dentist is the job Stephen Miller looks like he should have. Just by the way. And also, let's not get it twisted. That restaurant owner didn't ask Sarah Huckabee Sanders to leave because of her opinions. Okay? She's a senior official of the Trump administration, not some rando with a blog. This person was protesting the government. Sarah Huckabee Sanders just happened to be a part of the government who showed up in her restaurant. Right? It's like if I had beef with the Teletubbies. It may have started with Lala, but if Tinky Winky shows up, some shit is going down. It's going down. Basically, people in power would like to be insulated from the effects of their actions. But if you're in a position where you can influence other people's lives, you shouldn't be shocked when you hear from the people whose lives you affect. Like, even athletes get booed by their fans when they're not doing a good job. And sports has no actual effect on people's lives. A missed shot has never shut down a community center, okay? Never happens. I mean, except for that one Shaq free throw that destroyed everything, but other than that. And the thing to notice here for me is, calls for civility. You know, people are like, you gotta be more civil, you gotta be more civil. It always tends to come from people in a position of privilege, right? Which I understand, to be honest. You know, the person winning in Monopoly is never the person flipping the board. Yeah. If you own all the hotels, you'd be like, hey, let's not fight about whose turn it is. Let's just enjoy the game. Come on, guys. Whereas everyone else is like, I've been in jail for 7 hours. If this game goes any longer, I'll miss my appointment with my night dentist. Oh, by the way, Night Dentist is now a hit show on CBS. Night Dentist, when the sun goes down, the cavities come out. And you know what gets me? You know what really gets me? Is in this whole argument when people say, but Trevor, why can't we be polite? Why not fight hate with love, just like Gandhi and Nelson Mandela? Don't ever forget, in their time, people were not exactly happy with how they protested, right? The British called Gandhi an agitator. Governments around the world called Nelson Mandela a terrorist. And every day we see people on the news and social media saying, why can't these protesters be more like Martin Luther King? He was civil. That's why he named it the civil rights. But what you forget is back when Martin was marching, people were complaining about him the same way these people are complaining about protesters right now.
People in Georgia are sick and tired of Martin Luther King. There he's been. He's attempted to stir up strife and disorder and violence.
The best thing for King to do is to get out of Alabama as quickly as he can because he's a menace to the peace of this city.
Martin Luther King and his coterie of troublemakers who jump about the South like so many fleas on a hot griddle and cause racial rashes where none have heretofore existed.
Wow, racists back then were so eloquent. A quarter air. And I like that he says Martin Luther King created racial tension where none existed. Like Dr. King went into the South and was like, y'all are black, what? I know that those leaders may have been racist, but even some people who said they agreed with what Dr. King stood for still didn't approve of how he did it. In fact, at one point, he had a 63% disapproval rating in the U.S. So look, all I'm saying is, what happened to Sarah Huckabee Sanders isn't nice, but as a government official, people protesting your policies is part of the job. And the good news is, Sarah, there's a ton of other chicken places you can go and eat. Yeah. And if you're struggling to find one, just ask your boss. We'll be right back.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. My guests tonight are co-authors of the political thriller, The President Is Missing, which is currently the number one book in the country. Please welcome President Bill Clinton and James Patterson. Hey. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm going
to
jump straight into it because I have so many questions for both of you. Let's start with the book. Congratulations on being number one in the country. This was an interesting collaboration, you know, because James, you have sold hundreds of millions of books around the world. You're an accomplished author. You've always said that you wish that more people would read. You're writing a thriller about a fictional president, and yet you thought, let me reach out to an actual president to get the facts right. Why did you think that was necessary?
Well, I usually just make stuff up. And
I thought it'd be great. And I've never read a book like this in terms of the authenticity. If you want to know what it's like to be president, this will really give you a feeling for it.
Right. But it's an extreme version of what it's like to be president, because this is a story
it's
about
a bad
president.
Weekend, yes.
Yeah. It's a president who goes out, and I won't spoil how it happens, but basically it's a president who discovers that there's a giant cybersecurity threat on the U.S., and he decides to take it in his own hands. He sneaks out of the White House, which is mind-blowing. How authentic was that? Did you ask the president if he did that?
I didn't ask him if he did. I knew he didn't do it.
Yeah. The answer is I didn't. What I tried to do is make it as authentic as I could if it did happen.
That right.
The Secret Service protects a lot of people. The law, I've explained this in the book. The law says everybody else, even like when I was there, Hillary, could sign off of Secret Service protection for a while. There's no provision for the president to do that. It's like but you could maybe do it for a couple of hours for purely for privacy reasons. If a friend of yours was dying or something like that. But you couldn't do it for very long. So we came up with a device. It was his idea the president ought to go missing. And somebody said, well, that'd be
a
good idea.
That, right?
But anyway, and so we worked out how it could happen and why it made sense in the context of the plot with cybersecurity.
But the authenticity thing, that is such a big deal. I mean, if the president went missing, it would happen like this. If there was a traitor in the White House, if there was an attack on the presidential motorcade, it would happen that way. And that was the beauty of the collaboration.
And you're writing, throughout the story, there are so many themes that tie into what America has experienced, is experiencing, and may experience in the future. You have a president that, in a different way, has gone rogue, a president who's saying, I'm going to do it all by myself. When you were writing this book, were there any parts of the current president that you looked at and you were like, yeah, our president needs a bit of that crazy in him?
No.
No.
We started it before the election.
Right.
No, because in this case, the president acknowledges that if he did what his adversaries think he did, it would be an impeachable offense. And that if he told them why he did what he did, they would have to back down, but he didn't trust them because he thought they would leak it to the press, and then his chance of stopping this attack on America would go away. So that's one part of the plot I'll give away. They're just, and it.
Don't we give say, away too much.
Huh? We say here, though, you cannot run a country when there is literally no trust. But we have seen now for almost 40 years, on and off, that demonizing your opponent, making people hate them, it's a terrible way to run a railroad, but it can get rewarded at election time.
It would be very difficult to write fiction about what's going on now.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually. He just gave you that whole riff about how authentic this is, and it was until recently. it was a fair description about how most presidents try to run the White House. And now, at least what I believe is that you try to get talented people who know things you don't know, who have skills you don't have. You tell them they're not going to be fired or demoted or isolated if they tell you something you don't want to hear.
Right.
Then you make a decision. Then if they disagree with the decision, the honorable thing to do is resign. I actually gave stunning endorsements to two people who resigned with honor from my administration, because they disagreed with the decision I made. And I think that's the way to do it. But you want to encourage people to say what they think.
Right.
And know nothing bad is going to happen to them.
Why didn't you do that when you were writing?
The threat that faces America in this book is not unlike a very real threat that we've now learned about in real life. And that is the threat of cybersecurity. Many experts warn that wars as we know them will come to end, and cyber warfare is the future. As a former president of the United States, how real is this threat, and what do you think America should be doing to combat it?
It is real. It's been building for more than 20 years. In 1997, when I was still in office, I issued the first executive order on cybersecurity. We set up a division of the National Security Council. Today, we spend $15 billion in at least in the public budget, maybe it's twice that in some of the intelligence budgets, as compared with $630 billion a year on every other kind of defense.
Wow.
So, and I believe that anything that is electronic can be hacked.
This is a thriller, but what happens in this book is real. It could happen. And it's not a case, people go, well, you know, the lights will go out for 4 hours. No, that's not the case. Everything goes out. And it's erased. All your medical records, all of your bank accounts, Wall Street, it's all gone.
It's funny because there's some people who are in debt and they're like, that sounds good to me. that sounds really good to me. Everything is erased? That sounds really good to me.
Some people will be happy.
But if all the... If you put the electrical grid out, you put the backup out,
right,
and while they were out, you fried all the transformers, a lot of people would die before you got it put back up.
Right, and it's a scary place to be in. The book is a thriller. And in many ways, I feel like your journey together as authors has also been a thriller. I've watched you on the road together. You've been promoting the book. James...
Mostly terrific. You talk about
how traveling around with President Clinton makes you understand what it's like to be Mike Pence. Like, no one pays attention to you. Yeah. You're just, like, randomly in the background.
But I'll tell you, I picked up a lot of new moves. I got an eye roll now.
Oh, yeah, we love the eye roll. We've seen that.
I got hold my head.
Right.
You know, if you get tall, I'll just be doing this.
You're going to be taking water off the table at the same time? Is that like you're practicing the moves? Yeah. But is that an interesting, relationship to have? Because you're working with a president.
He's been terrific to work with. I mean, we really cooperated. The first two chapters, we rewrote those six times.
Could you override him, though, as a president?
There never was an argument. We never had a disagreement. There never was an argument.
Because you were
all
afraid?
Yeah. What do you think, I'm crazy? He's got all these...
Oh, you know, look.
He's got these Secret Service people everywhere, you know. They're out there. They're watching
just
us.
Can you get 2 hours and you can handle it together?
You should be a little scared now, too, because they're watching you.
In this case, I was the apprentice.
Oh, nice. Look at that.
This guy, he's written all these books.
Right.
I read a double ton of them. And the interesting thing was, what I wanted to know was, since I'm a voracious consumer of thrillers and have been for 35 years, you know, I'd call him and say, Jim, it's been 30 pages since we killed anybody.
You know, you think you have it tough, and you do in The Daily Show, okay? I do The Daily Novel.
Right, so you're writing every single day.
A novel every day.
Right. If you let's switch and talk about what's happening in the country right now. As a former president, you have a unique perspective on many of the issues America is facing currently. Two things I want to talk to you about, civility and immigration. The first is what's happening right now in America, the conversation around civility. People arguing Sarah Huckabee Sanders should not have been kicked out of that restaurant. The restaurant owner did something wrong. And, you know, it's about being civil. We should all be nice to each other, even if we disagree. Now, your daughter tweeted out that she believes that government officials should be held accountable or should be spoken to in public because it does shape how they see the world. What are your views on this as a former president?
Well, I think that the two are not necessarily inconsistent. That is, it is true that when we were in church once, and Chelsea was about 14, we were in a church that was a welcoming church. That is, they welcomed people without regard to their sexual orientation or identity. And this man got up and protested and said we should have been done more about AIDS. And he was absolutely right. And we wound up doubling funding for treatment and research and paying for about 25 or 30% of the global effort at the time. And it still was nowhere near enough. That, I thought, was fine. Then you ask yourself, well, should you go from there to asking her to leave the restaurant? That's a decision for the restaurant owner to make. What I'd like to point out is, would it be better if that didn't happen? I think it would. I worked hard, and Nelson Mandela helped me work hard when they were so hateful to me, when I was there personally hateful, not to respond in kind.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of poison has been poured down America's throat since that 2016 campaign started.
Right.
Started off calling Mexicans rapists and murderers. So it's hard to pour poison down other people's throat and not have some of it come back up and bubble up. So what I would say is, I read the article about the lady who owned the restaurant, and I wound up with a lot of respect for the way she debated it. But I also had a lot of respect for the way Sarah Huckabee Sanders handled it. I mean, she was very dignified. She didn't chew him out. She didn't pitch a fit. She didn't call him in them, you know, immigrant loving thugs or whatever. She just got up and left and offered to pay. So maybe what I'd like to see this be the beginning of something where, you know, it would be better if we started talking to each other again. I remember I had 3 good weeks with Congress once when the Senate, when the Senate Majority Leader called me a spoiled brat on a Sunday morning television program.
Right.
So as soon as he got home, I picked up the phone and called him. He said, "You called to chew me out, didn't you?" I said, "Yes, I did, but not for the reason you say." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Your staff told you you had to do this Sunday talk show. You worked all weekend. You woke up with a headache. You were mad you did it. They could tell you were irritated. They baited you with me, and you took the bait." He said, "That's exactly what happened." And he couldn't believe I wasn't mad at him. We had 3 good weeks. My point is, at sooner or later, people need to quit tearing each other down and go to work. But I think that you can't foment as much hatred as has been fomented by the administration without having a blowback. So if they want to have more civility, they need to stop the name calling and take the lead, like I tell you.
When we talk about civility and treating other people like human beings the way we'd like to be treated, the conversation of immigration is one that has really led to, in many ways, the Sarah Huckabee Sanders story.
Absolutely.
You see these images of children being separated from their parents at the border. You see the Trump administration calling for a zero-tolerance policy. What was interesting was then the current president saying that these were actually your policies and President Obama's policies that he is, I guess, fighting against but also enforcing but completely not for. First of all, were these your policies?
No.
They were not. Fine. So now you go to the next thing, which is, as a president, how do you balance keeping your borders intact whilst also treating people who have come into the country undocumented in a humane manner?
Well, first of all, every country is entitled to protect its borders. We have 2 border threats today. Fentanyl coming in from China is killing a lot of Americans. And heroin coming over the southern border is causing a lot of trouble. But there's been almost no net in-migration from Mexico since 2010. It's a made-up problem. As the mayor of Brownsville, Texas, said the other day, these people are from Central America. They're afraid of the narco-traffickers. The law says that those who have a legitimate fear can be given asylum in our country, and those that are disappointed that their countries have been wrecked by narco-traffickers and can't make a living are not eligible. That's the law now. There is a humane way to do that without taking the kids away from the parents. There is nothing in the law that says they have to do this, and it's wrong. So, if you, I'll tell you something, the crime rate among immigrants is much lower than the crime rate of the native-born. The murder rate of among Muslims is about a third that of the native-born. We need to quit, we need to get the facts straight, take a deep breath, and say, yes, we agree with you. Everybody's got a right to protect their border. Yes, we all care about the victims of immigrant crime. What I did do when I was president is sign a bill saying that if an immigrant, even one properly documented, committed a serious crime against an American, they lost their right to stay in this country. But this idea of zero tolerance and putting these people in cages, doing this to the kids, it's an outrage. And we should stop it now. And reunite the kids.
One of the reasons, in terms of the book, that we wanted to do, what we wanted to accomplish, is to remind people how important the job of the president is, how difficult it is, how you mentioned the 4 days that the president of the book goes through are very difficult.
Right.
But we wanted people to think about that. We want them to think about it when they go to the midterms.
Right.
Think about how important those jobs are. Think how important it is in terms of who you're putting into Congress.
And when you were writing the story, was it also important to you to display the relationship the president has with the people around him? Because that was something that was key in the book as well. Was that really important to try and find out?
I worked hard to... We talked through a lot. to make sure that, at least based on my experience and my observation of previous presidents, that this is a pretty good take of a well-organized White House where you have strong people who are smart, who know different things and have different skills, and they do their jobs and they make these decisions. And there's some drama in the thing.
And one of the things the president did is he just kept pushing and pushing and pushing so that it would be, that these characters would really be flesh and blood.
Right.
I mean, there was, we were a week away from when we had to hand the book in, and we were still working on one of the major characters in terms of just making that character more.
That's something I've always enjoyed about not just your writing, but your ideas about the characters. You know, you have one of my favorite quotes where you say you believe that everybody loves to read. Some people say I don't like reading. You're like, no, they just haven't found the right book.
Especially kids.
Right. Which book would you think you need to start President Trump on so that he would start to read? What would you recommend as a favorite?
You got a good example? That's a stumper, I'll tell you.
It's a short book.
I'm civil.
No, I'm being serious.
Yes.
At the end of World War I, a German Christian Democrat named Max Weber wrote a book called Politics as a Vocation. It's about 120 pages long. And among other things, he says, number one, politics is hard. It's a long and slow boring of hard boards. And number two, if you take a job where you have power over another person's life, you should be very humble because you are given temporary power and yet you are not omnipotent, you are not all wise, and you are putting your soul at risk. It's a great description of the importance of politics and the joy of it, but how you can't do it right unless you're humble enough to realize that you're holding other people's lives in your hands and you should value them and take care of them.
Wow.
I think the greatest lesson for me in spending a year with President Clinton is just understanding how this guy's devoted his whole life to trying to do the right thing for the people in this country.
Wow, that's a powerful position to be in. It's, you know, going back to your point of humility and being humbled, I have noticed a journey that you've been on from the beginning of the book press tour. And that has been the journey of, you know, being asked questions about the Me Too movement. You know, we saw your incident on the morning news where, you know, a journalist said, hey, you didn't apologize, and you did apologize, and that got you a bit riled up.
Wasn't my best hour.
Right, wasn't your finest hour, I will say that. And, you know, and over the weeks, I've watched your interviews and I've read what you've said on how these conversations have shaped your mind and your understanding of the Me Too movement. Honest question, has it been hard for you to reprogram your brain? Has it been difficult for you to go, I have to relearn something that is happening now as opposed to how I've always seen the world?
No, it means that I need to not react to the raw pain of having to relive something that happened 20 years ago. And I need to be aware that, unfortunately, there are still millions of people every day who face objectification, disrespect, discrimination, and sometimes outright abuse in the workplace, on the street, and at home. And now we're all alive to it in ways we weren't before, and we're all trying to work our way through, not all of us, but most of us are, trying to work our way through how we can use this moment to build a better country in person after person after person's lives. And that should be the number one priority of everybody. And, you know, I regret very much what I did all those years ago, and I've tried to pay for it and tried to atone for it and try to do right. But that's, if somebody doesn't remember what the facts were, I can hardly be angry. It was a long time ago.
Right.
And so I shouldn't have been angry. I should have not taken my eyes off the fact that there is still, after all these years, there is actual abuse and discrimination and objectification and disrespect, and it happens in the workplace, on the street,
I mean,
and
at home. One of the checks, though, is the media, honestly, this should have been dealt with 20 years ago. Should have been done 10 years ago. I remember being with Ashley Judd on the set of Kiss the Girls, and she was in her 20s, and she was talking about the casting couch then.
Right. No.
The story was there.
I'm with you completely, yeah. And I guess the should have, would have, could have goes to everyone, and everyone has questioned themselves. But I guess before I let you go, as when we strip away president, when we strip away a man who's one of the most powerful men in the world, as a man, it's the instinct is to go to a defensive place. As someone, as you said, with your past, your instinct is to get angry if someone misremembers a fact or two. What would you recommend to other men out there to begin the journey of understanding and self-reflection?
To become first other-directed. That is, look at what's happening in people's lives. Then you have to ask yourself, how do I think, how do I feel, how do I act? And both try to make sure you're doing better, even if you think you're a really good person and you're not aware of ever having done anything wrong. And then asking the women in your life, or if you're gay, your partners in your life, whatever your gender. And then look at the workplace. I was really impressed with what Starbucks did after that racial incident. You remember when those guys were discriminated against?
I remember.
That happens to that happens to black people all the time. Something like that. And they immediately said, we're going to stop this institutionally. And so I went in the local Starbucks in this little town where Hillary and I live, and I asked this young woman who was working there, I said, did you go to your training? Tell me about it. She said, no, because I'm a part-time employee and I was off that day, but I have to do makeup. And I'm so glad they didn't leave us out either. We're all going to do this. We're going to get better at this. That's what we should be, how we should think about this Me Too moment. This is we can't waste it. We got to do better.
Thank you so much for your time, gentlemen. It's been an honor having you on the show. Thank you so much. The President Is Missing is available now. President Clinton, James Patterson, everybody.
The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central and the Comedy Central app. Watch full episodes and videos at thedailyshow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And subscribe to The Daily Show on YouTube for exclusive content and more.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.